So I don't have as much time tonight as I would normally take, and I apologize, Amy, as I would normally take to tell you about her. And for that, I must, all the awards she's won and the wonderful work she's done, you can find out about it, though, by reading your program. But I do insist on saying a few things before I present her to you this evening. Those of you who are regular listeners of her award-winning Democracy Now! Program each day on KPFK, you know, if you listen to that show, that she refers to the show as the exception to the rulers. And indeed it is. Anyone who heard her take on Bill Clinton last year knows what I mean. But you know, I think that Amy Goodman is also the exception to the journalists in this country. I mean, seriously, can you name me another journalist who, like Amy Goodman, consistently asks the tough questions and who follows up soft answers with more tougher questions? Can you name me another journalist who, like Amy Goodman, risks being fired every time she says no to her bosses when they attempt to regulate the content of her program, or, as is the case with the management of Pacifica Radio, attempt to determine what outside speaking engagement she can accept on her own time? Name me another journalist of national prominence who, like Amy Goodman, is more concerned with having her listeners hear the voices of the oppressed and the powerless than of the oppressors and the power elite. And name me another journalist who can do as good a job of traveling into foreign lands and entering into danger zones to get the story and then tell that story so well, so movingly on radio day in and day out. Well, every reporter worth being called a journalist ought to be doing what Amy Goodman does, but you and I know that the sad fact is that as the control of the media is becoming more and more concentrated in fewer and fewer bigger corporate hands, there just aren't many Amy Goodmans left. And that's why it's so important that we honor her this evening, and that's why it's so important that people who still believe in the mission of investigative journalism and alternative public radio must support Amy Goodman as she fights to keep the Pacifica Radio Network from going the way of the rest of the media in this country. So now, from the studios of The Fired and the Banned, from the studios of you, the listeners, a journalist who is never afraid to speak truth to power, the exception to the rulers, Amy Goodman.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, it's really a great privilege to be here tonight, even if it's only for about an hour, to be able to speak to you live in Los Angeles. As you know, those of you who listen to Democracy Now! On KPFK, during the fundraising drive, they took the program off the air and played old tapes of Democracy Now! For some unknown reason. We were producing the program daily from New York. It was the only station in the country that chose to play old tapes. And as we were dealing with the pressing issues of the day, they played a tape at KPFK of Democracy Now! Covering President-elect Bush's victory speech of December. Which certainly degrades the product, the programming, that for people who are tuning in perhaps for the first time wondering how it was that I just had realized that Bush had become president. It has been very puzzling to me why that decision was made, but extremely disturbing that what they put out every day on KPFK was a lie, a statement made throughout the program at 6, which is then repeated at 9 in the morning, that I refused to fundraise for KPFK. That was patently false. We have a network of 5 stations. On 2 of those stations, I fundraised every day because they asked me to. But on KPFK, the last time I fundraised, the general manager of the station, Mark Shubb, called me and said I would not be allowed to fundraise anymore if I insisted on talking about the structure of the organization, which was that at each station there is a local advisory board that you can be a part of to ensure that there is democratic participation at the local level. It's called the local advisory board. And there's a national advisory board for Pacifica, which you can also be a part of and find out about. He said he did not like the local advisory board, and I was not to talk about it or to mention it. I said that I talk about it on every station. I encourage people to give financial contributions to the station and to be involved, as I do for people to be involved in politics around this country and around the world, that people should know about the politics of their organization and in what way they can participate. The response was, and this was in the last fundraising drive, that they said, I would not be able to fundraise anymore. And what they then did was take tapes that I had, that they had made of my pitching, and they edited them to change the meaning. The first person that Mark Shubb approached, the general manager, who was the operations director, Roy Hurst, and he said he wouldn't do it. He said, I can't do that in good conscience, is to change, well, another AFTRA member's words or another journalist. I can't do that. So he moved on to the next person that perhaps was more afraid of losing their job. It's these kinds of statements and actions that I find increasingly unfathomable, confusing why they are choosing to do this. Particularly here at KPFK, the general manager has raised issue after issue with Democracy Now!, a program that has raised perhaps more or as much money as any program at this station and breaks records on other stations around the country that builds audience. I say these things only to say that all of that criterion they use for, quote, professionalizing the network, for expanding audience, are being met. And it's this show, Democracy Now!, as well as local shows, I come from New York, that are the most successful, that are being the most seriously cracked down on, if not gutted completely. And we have to ask why. Pacifica was founded more than 50 years ago by a man named Lou Hill, who refused to fight in World War II. And when he came out of jail, he said, there has to be a media outlet that is not run by corporations building a drumbeat for war. He felt at that time they were building a drumbeat for a third world war, that there needed to be a media outlet that was run by journalists and artists, not, as George Gerbner, founder of the Cultural Environment Movement, says, not by corporations with nothing to tell and everything to sell. And so that's how Pacifica was born, the first station, KPFA, in Berkeley in 1949, and then the stations around the country. Here, KPFK, 1959, KPFT in Houston, 1970, the station I'm at, WBAI in New York, 1960, and WPFW in Washington in 1977. The station in Texas, KPFT, in its first year of operation, was blown up twice. The transmitter was bombed twice by the Ku Klux Klan, because the Klan understood what a dangerous organization Pacifica was, because we're about breaking the sound barrier. We're about opening the airwaves to voices of the marginalized, who I think express the majority opinion in this country. Because the way the corporate media works, you've got Viacom that owns CBS, General Electric that owns NBC, ABC owned by Disney, and then AOL Time Warner with CNN. They bring you a minority elite, and I'm not talking about people of color. And that elite, the experts on issues like human rights, like Henry Kissinger, for example, you hear their voices over and over again. And so they, as Noam Chomsky says, manufacture consensus, particularly egregious in times of war, say the bombing of the Persian Gulf of Iraq. In the time 6 months leading up to the Persian Gulf War, more than half the population in this country was against the bombing. Yet only 1% of the time in the mainstream media did you see or hear a peace activist or leader, a peace leader, interviewed. The rest of the time, it was retired generals or business leaders or politicians who were for the bombing of Iraq. And in that way, the media manufactures consensus. The same happened with the bombing of Yugoslavia. There's no surprise in the Persian Gulf War that at the time CBS was owned by Westinghouse, NBC, by General Electric, two of the makers of most of the parts for most of the weapons that were used in the Persian Gulf War. So what you basically see on television is a military hardware show with the celebrity so-called reporters, people like Diane Sawyer and others, going into the planes or the tanks to show you how it feels to be right on the front line. Well, they should be, as those planes are flying overhead, on the ground to see what it feels like to be a target. That is our role as journalists. It's a privilege to be here and to be honored by the National Lawyers Guild and to see lawyers who are doing the work of challenging the corporations, like Bert Voorhees, who's here tonight, who is one of the lawyers involved with the lawsuit against Chevron, the largest corporation that's headquartered in California. Democracy Now! Producer Jeremy Scahill and I had the chance to go to Nigeria in 1998. And there we were able to expose the story for a U.S. audience, most important because that's where Chevron is based, that in a land, in an area of the Niger Delta called Elijah Land, Chevron was engaged in what it was usually engaged in, and that was drilling for oil, pulling power from the earth, disempowering the most powerless communities on earth and taking that power to the most powerful countries around the world. And in the midst of that, they were involved with egregious, terrible oil spills, environmental devastation. And so the people of that area of Elijah Land went to the barge where Chevron was operating, and they demanded to speak to the American in charge of Chevron Nigeria Limited, because they knew that it was the American who had the power to say, please, stop polluting our land, start providing jobs to those of us who live here, start somehow empowering these communities that are the host communities for these oil companies. I was, by the way, inspired to go to Nigeria because I had the opportunity in 1995 to interview Ken Sarawiwa, the remarkable Nigerian Ogoni activist who brought word of what was happening to his people, the Ogoni people of Ogoni land in the Niger Delta, around the world. Their Shell was involved in the devastation of their land, and their children grew up in the shadow of the flame. That is the areas of Nigeria where they burnt the gas, called the gassing off of the oil wells that are not allowed here in the United States. They would just burn them. And when there would be these apartment building size flares that went 24 hours a day, terribly polluting the air, hurting the health of the people who live there. And the kids never knew a dark night. Although they didn't have electricity, they weren't able to get oil for their own communities, they lived in the shadow of this flame. And Ken Sarawiwa went around the world talking about it. When he came to our studios at WBAI, he said he was a marked man, marked by the Shell Corporation as well as the Nigerian regime that was shored up by these multinational corporations. He went back to Nigeria, he was arrested, and ultimately on November 10th, 1995, he and eight other minority rights activists in Nigeria were executed by the state, very much with the help of Shell. And I thought one day, if I could go to Nigeria to look at this nexus of corporate and state power that was shored up also by the U.S. government. And we had this chance to go, and we found the story about Chevron. And so there were the Nigerian villagers at the Chevron barge asking to negotiate with the top executives of Chevron And Chevron did fly in some people, and they thought they were the executives coming to negotiate. But in fact, what happened is that Chevron Corporation flew in the Nigerian military and the mobile police, known as the kill and go. That's the kill and go. And they flew into the barge, and as the helicopters disgorged the military, they opened fire on the people, killed two of them, critically wounded a third, had others rounded up and thrown into the notorious Nigerian jails. Now, of course, Chevron can't do this here. They can't do it in Los Angeles or San Francisco if people protest outside their refineries or their headquarters. They can't just open fire and gun them down. But they can do it with the complicity of the mainstream media that doesn't cover issues in Africa or Nigeria and Africa's largest country. And because Chevron knows that they will not be exposed, they can carry out these slaughters that take place not only in the Niger Delta, but in other areas of Nigeria where Chevron operates. So I got a chance to go to the Chevron shareholders meeting a few years ago, and on the proxy of the Ursuline Sisters of Tildunk, I got up and asked Ken Durr, then the CEO of Chevron, a question. I said, will you end the policy, the Chevron policy of flying in the Nigerian military and killing protesters on your site? And he said, no, that's ridiculous, and said, next question. But it's these kinds of stories that are not just stories, that are very real life and death situations. And it's people like you from the National Lawyers Guild who take on these issues and pursue them. And it's so critical to have that link between journalists and between the activist lawyers that will go there and stand up for the people who try to stand up for themselves, who put themselves in harm's way to protect their villages and their families, and they're gunned down by corporations chartered right here in the United States. So I want to thank the National Lawyers Guild for that kind of work. I see also that the National Lawyers Guild co-publishes Stolen Lives, the book documenting police killings in this country, a story, a project of which is very close to my heart, because our technical director, Errol Maitland, who hasn't been with us for more than a year, because of his frontline work. Errol, who is the technical director of Democracy Now!, also a producer at WBAI in New York, was at the Patrick Dorisman funeral, covering the funeral for WBAI with his cell phone. Patrick Dorisman was the Haitian man who came out of a lounge late one night in New York, and undercover cops came up to him and asked if he knew where they could buy drugs. He said no, and within a minute, he had been shot dead by the undercover cop, the only man shot dead for just saying no. After he was killed, on March 24th, a funeral was held for him in Brooklyn, in the Haitian part of Brooklyn, and thousands came out to honor him and to protest yet another man killed by the New York Police Department. Errol was there on the front lines, and after the funeral, the police moved in on the mourners and the protesters, and they started beating people up. Errol had his cell phone on. He was very clearly identified as WBAI. He went up to the police and said, "Sir, can you tell us what you're doing right now?" And they beat him to the ground as he broadcast live on WBAI. They then ultimately were forced to take him to the hospital, and they shackled him to the emergency room bed and then to his bed in the coronary intensive care unit. He suffered severe heart damage. I still say technical director every day, but this is the kind of situation that and the kind of story and the kind of reporter that Pacifica can be extremely proud of. Instead, what we're finding on a daily basis is a kind of crackdown that we have never seen before. The questions raised of the work we do, particularly here by the general manager, KPFK, why we insist, as in the case of Abner Louima, on bringing people the graphic details of police brutality before they have their morning coffee. It is a morning show, after all. Well, I said, I think the issue is more that the brutality is taking place than what time we report it. And I only have a few minutes, so I just want to go very quickly. I want to congratulate you for your work serving on the National Steering Committee of the Coalition to Free Lori Berenson, and sending a member to monitor her recent new trial in Peru. I saw Blaise Bonpain here tonight, who I had the tremendous privilege to go down to Peru with and see Lori, interview her, and record for the first time Lori's voice so that she could explain in her own words what she was doing in Peru. When we came back to the United States, I felt it was too dangerous to air that tape then, but a year and a half later, when she was moved to Lima, we aired that tape so we could do what is in the Pacifica tradition, and that is allow people to speak for themselves. Soon after we aired the tapes, a world exclusive, I was brought down to Washington, and I was challenged by the chief financial officer of Pacifica with the general managers in a room, and she said, why was it that this girl went to another country and broke their laws? As she listened to Lori Berenson, she simply had to turn the radio off. These are the kinds of pressures that we face. And I see that the chapter here has also continued to chair the Los Angeles Coalition to Stop the Execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It is absolutely critical that people fight not only for Mumia Abu-Jamal, but for prisoners on death row around the country. And, of course, tomorrow will be the first federal execution in 40 years with the execution of Timothy McVeigh. And there are protests, hundreds of protesters, all over the country and around the world. But in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, I thought I would play his own words and play for you words that, well, were typical for us to do on Democracy Now! We're the first national broadcast that brings you the commentaries of Mumia Abu-Jamal on a daily, on a regular basis, starting in 1997 until the prison no longer allowed reporters to come in and videotape, audiotape, or photograph any prisoners in the Pennsylvania system. But we continued to broadcast the voice, despite the fact we were pulled from every station in Pennsylvania, 12 stations, because they said it was inappropriate to air Mumia Abu-Jamal's voice. We felt it was critical to stand up for freedom of the press, for academic freedom, because that network was run by a university, Temple University, and for freedom of speech. So I was particularly alarmed when this year, after what we call the coup at WBAI, after in KPFA, Pacifica shut down that station for 23 days until 10 to 15,000 people marched in the streets of Berkeley chanting, "Whose station? Our station." In New York, we faced the same situation where the program director, Bernard White, very beloved in our community, the union steward, and the general manager were all fired on the weekend of this past Christmas. When I played this commentary of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the newly installed general manager moved into the studio and stood over me as I played this. And I thought that I would end with Mumia's words and again congratulate all of you for the kind of work that you do.
The former Minister of Information for the Black Panther Party, Eldridge Cleaver, once said, "Information is the raw material for new ideas. If you get misinformation, you get some pretty messed up ideas," unquote. With late night lock changes and a phalanx of security guards prowling the halls, the coup of WBAI-FM, the flagship station of the Pacifica Network, had begun. Popular veterans of the listener-supported station, like program manager Bernard White, and WBAI union shop steward Sharon Harper, both producers of the morning wake-up call show, received letters of termination at their homes several hours before their shifts were to begin. WBAI general manager Valerie Van Eisler, who, like White, was a 20-year vet of the station, was similarly fired by Pacifica, ostensibly for failing to accept a position at network headquarters in Washington, D.C. While these firings were attempts to remove and thereby install management personnel, it was also an opening salvo in a pitched battle designed to silence radical dissent and open the airwaves to the corporatization of WBAI. If you want WBAI to become a nice, sweet, safe alternative like NPR, then do nothing, for that will happen. If, however, you want to continue to hear about the struggles of the peoples of the world for liberty, for life, for dignity, as in East Timor, or the noble life and death struggle of the Zapatistas in the mountains of Mexico, or of cases like the slaughter of African immigrant Amadou Diallo, or of the continuing human rights violations occurring every day in the nation's burgeoning prison industrial complex, then you must fight for it, as you would fight for your very life or anything dear to you. The great Frederick Douglass perhaps put it best when he said, quote, "Without struggle, there is no progress," unquote. If the various communities of New York and northern New Jersey don't struggle for their vision of WBAI-FM, it'll be gone. It's as simple as that. What's happening at BAI was attempted a year ago at KPFA-FM in San Francisco. The people of the Bay Area rallied in unprecedented strength, over 10,000 folks at one protest, and backed the Pacifica board down. Listeners to BAI must do no less. In theory, at least, the airwaves belong to the people. For the last 40 years, the staff and local management of WBAI have tried to make that theory an American reality. If you're thrilled by the no-holds-barred radio reporting of Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, who's constantly threatened and harassed by the Pacifica board for her radical reporting, then fight for her. For in fighting for her, you fight for the finest traditions of WBAI, and against the corporationists who want to turn a national resource into just another commodity. To keep it raw, to keep it real, you've got to fight for it. For more information, you may contact Concerned Friends of WBAI at 800-825-0055 or 718-707-7189. They can also be reached over the Internet at www.savepacifica.net. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mumia Abu-Jamal, reporting from Death Row. I'll just end by saying that at the end of every program, I conclude it by saying, from the embattled studios of WBAI, from the studios of the Banned and the Fired, from the studios of you, our listeners, all three of Pacifica law firms are going after me right now. And I say there's nothing I'd rather do than to stop saying that. I actually think it's really a small, almost pathetic remembrance of all of the voices now as the firings and the bannings continue at WBAI and around the network. And it's the smallest thing that I could do as someone who remains at Pacifica is to go to where the silence is and say something. As my colleague Bernard White, who's fired, always ends our local morning show, Wake-Up Call, did until very recently, always ended it by saying, stay strong and pay close attention. It's totally up to you whether Democracy Now! Remains, and you brought it back to the airways of KPFK live every day, and I thank you very much.
The award that we're presenting to Amy tonight from the National Lawyers Guild simply says, the Los Angeles chapter of the National Lawyers Guild honors Amy Goodman for her fearless pursuit of the news, wherever it may lead her, and for her willingness to always speak truth to power. Yeah. And this is Blaise Bond Payne.
Good evening, everyone. And good evening, Amy. You are the best journalist in the United States. It was a joy to go to Peru with you, Amy, to the cell of Lori Berenson in Socabaya Prison in Arequipa. And it was kind of a miracle that we got into that cell, but it was even more of a miracle that we got out because because she was carrying a wire And the Peruvians didn't know that. So, anyway, I'm here tonight on behalf of the band and the Fired, and I wanted Amy to know that from KPFK alone, there are 150 of us. And Amy, this is the list of those from KPFK who have been banned and fired. Personally, I was fired by my answering machine. It was the voice of Mark Shubb. I had been broadcasting at prime time since 1969, and the answering machine told me that I was fired. So Amy's point is very well taken. We want to get Pacifica back, and Amy, I want to assure you that we're in solidarity with you, and we will not rest until they stop the harassment and give you the opportunity to do what you do best, and that is this great journalism. We're with you. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you.